Good evening for WBAI News in New York. I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Wednesday, June 21st, 2017. The Republican Party had wins last night in South Carolina and Georgia. Donald Trump tweeted, "Well, the special elections are over, and those who want to make America great again," in caps, "are 5-0, exclamation point. All the fake news, all the money spent equals zero." In South Carolina, Republican Ralph Norman won in a vote which was closer than expected because it's in a district where Trump defeated Clinton by more than 18 percentage points. Norman, who is a former state lawmaker, aligns himself with Trump. He says support from Trump resonated positively with voters. Trump recorded a robocall in support of Norman's campaign and sent out Twitter messages encouraging voters to back him. In Georgia, Karen Handel beat Democrat John Ossoff. In suburban Atlanta, Ossoff says the special election for Georgia's 6th congressional district showed Democrats could fight in places where no one thought it was possible to fight.
"We showed them what courage and kindness and humility are capable of. At a time when politics has been dominated by fear and hatred and scapegoating and division, this community stood up. Women in this community stood up."
Karen Handel, who won the election in Georgia, is the first woman elected to Congress from Georgia, but she's far from being a feminist. She's anti-choice. When on the board of Susan Komen, she tried to cut their funding for Planned Parenthood breast exams. She wrote a book about defunding Planned Parenthood called Planned Bullyhood. And Georgia Life Alliance certified Karen Handel as a pro-life candidate. As Georgia's Secretary of State, she tried to force voters to prove their citizenship in order to vote. This led to a lawsuit which Handel lost. She also wants to build the wall and cut regulation. She fits right in there with the Trump administration. She wants to repeal Obamacare.
"We have a lot of work to do, a lot of problems that we need to solve. We need to finish the drill on health care."
Tomorrow, Senate Republicans are expected to present their health care bill, which has been written under secrecy by 13 white men. This may cause some Republicans to withhold their support for the bill. Meanwhile, Trump, focusing on Democrats today, tweeted, "Democrats would do much better as a party if they got together with Republicans on health care, tax cuts, security. Obstruction doesn't work." Some Republican senators, however, have complained about their party's secrecy regarding the health care bill. Among the critics has been Senator Ron Johnson. He's a Republican from Wisconsin. He expressed doubts that there'd be enough time to study the bill's impacts in time for a vote late next week. "I've made leadership well aware of the fact that I need information to make the final decision," he said. "And if I don't have the information to justify a yes vote, I won't be voting yes." Moderate Senator Susan Collins, Republican from Maine, said she has no idea if she'd back the legislation until she sees the language. She wants to know the impact on coverage and on cost. The budget office concluded that the House-approved version of the bill would leave 23 million Americans without health care coverage by 2026. On Tuesday, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, Republican from Texas, said there's more work to do before the bill adequately cuts premiums. A second conservative, Mike Lee, Republican from Utah, complained about not seeing the legislation, despite being on the working group of senators assigned to craft it. And he says lawmakers should have seen the measure weeks ago if they are to vote on it next week. Another conservative, Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, said it would be a non-starter if the developing bill's subsidies are as large as Obama's. Alaska's moderate, Lisa Murkowski, said she didn't know how she'd vote. She said, "I have no idea what the deal is." She opposed past conservative efforts to include language barring federal payments to Planned Parenthood, a group many Republicans abhor because it provides abortions. Democrats have also lambasted McConnell for writing the sweeping legislation in closed-door meetings. They unanimously oppose the GOP bill. They lack the votes, however, to defeat it. They fear that McConnell will jam the legislation through the Senate with little debate, limiting their chance to scrutinize the bill and whip up opposition against it. The hashtag Hold the Floor was trending on Twitter this week as Democratic senators blasted the Republican attempt to repeal Obamacare. Here's Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy. He said, "This isn't a health care bill. It's a tax cut for millionaires." He holds up a chart which shows that millions will lose health care coverage and another chart which shows how tax cuts go to the 1% after fewer Americans would have health care. Chris Murphy.
So this isn't theoretical. This isn't about numbers. This is about real people. We know them. They exist throughout our states. I've told this story a few times on the floor of the Senate before. When I think about the progress that's been made over the course of the last 6 years, I think about Betty Berger. Betty is a woman who lives in Meriden, Connecticut, and Betty and her husband did everything that we asked them to do. They were morally upstanding citizens, contributed to their community. They had a, full employment. They were raising good kids. And her husband switched jobs. He switched jobs and he had a 1 week, maybe it was a 2 week period of time in between those two jobs. And as luck or lack of it would have it, during that brief intermission between employment, their son was diagnosed with cancer. That cancer then became a pre-existing condition, which meant that her husband's new employer would not cover the son as part of a family plan. The cancer progressed and progressed and progressed, and this family, the Bergers, had no means to keep up with the payments. And their story, unfortunately, is not foreign to folks who have heard from constituents who have gone bankrupt because of health care costs. The Bergers lost everything. The Bergers first went through their savings, then they went into their son's college account. Then they sold their car. Then they sold their house. They lost everything they had trying to make sure that they had health care for their son simply because he got diagnosed with cancer during the one tiny interim between their family's insurance coverage. That pre-existing condition doomed that family, and there, but by the grace of God, would that be us? That could happen to any one of us. And yet today, medical bankruptcy is frankly a thing of the past. Why? Well, it's not because healthcare costs any less. It's because we've said that we are not going to allow insurance companies to deny coverage to someone because they have a cancer diagnosis. In fact, we're not going to allow insurance companies to charge you more just because you are sick. And guess what? People have been able to keep their college savings account. They've been able to keep their car. They've been able to keep their house, even if they get sick. That's what this bill has meant. 20 million more people are insured, yes, but the number of personal bankruptcies in this country have plummeted by 50%, almost entirely because there aren't Bergers any longer. There aren't people who had to live through what the Berger family had to live through. That's what this is about. This is about real people who are going to go through miserable, terrible experiences because of the bill that the Senate Republicans are just days away from putting on to the floor. I know my colleagues have covered this exhaustively, but I just want to show you visually what CBO says the House bill does. I know it's in vogue for the president and Republicans to say that Obamacare is in a death spiral, but that's not what CBO says. CBO says that if you keep the Affordable Health Care Act and you actually implement it rather than undermine it, rather than sabotage it, as the president of the United States is today, well, then the number of people that don't have health insurance, it remains fairly stable from 2017 to 2026. It's about 28 million people. But if you enact the American Health Care Act, the bill that passed through the House, that number goes almost immediately from about 26 million up to 40 million, right? About 15 million people lose insurance right off the bat, like within a heartbeat of passing this bill. About 14 million people lose insurance, and then over time it grows to 51 million people. That is not the Affordable Health Care Act in a death spiral, right? That's market stability. This is a death spiral. The death spiral starts upon passage of the act that is being secretly negotiated today. And I get it that 23 million is kind of a hard number to get your head wrapped around, right? What does 23 million people really mean? These numbers are so huge. So here's what 23 million people is. It's the entire population of Alaska, Delaware, Hawaii, Idaho, Kansas, Maine, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, North Dakota, Rhode Island, South Dakota, and let's just throw in West Virginia. That's what 23 million people is. That is a humanitarian catastrophe, right? And remember, 23 million people is what you get to at the end of 10 years, but 14 million people lose it right off the bat. There is no way for our healthcare system to provide coverage to 14 million people who had insurance one day and then don't have it the next. And by the way, they tend to be the sickest people because that's who's going to lose healthcare first. And so why are we doing this? Right? Why would you choose to inflict this kind of pain on people? Why would you ask to run for Congress in order to put this kind of hurt on the American public? And here's the answer. And I wish this weren't the answer. Like, I wish there was a different answer, but here's the answer. 23 million people lose health insurance, and the cost of that is about $800 billion of money out of the healthcare system. And it's not coincidence that that then gets transferred into $650 or so odd billion dollars in tax breaks for the pharmaceutical companies, the insurance companies, and for really, really rich people. Like that's not just by accident that it worked out that the amount of money that you took from poor people and from middle class people and from sick people is the exact amount of money that you're transferring to the pharmaceutical industry, the insurance industry, and rich people. And here's another way of looking at it. Here's where the tax cuts go. The lowest quintile, the second quintile, the middle quintile, even the fourth quintile don't get a lot of money out of this tax break. It's the top quintile, it's the top 20% of income earners that get an average tax cut of $2,700. And here's the big benefit. The top 1% of income earners get a $37,000 tax cut out of this bill. The top 1% of income earners get a $37,000 tax cut from this bill. Let me say that again. 23 million people lose health care, so that the top 1% of income earners get a $37,000 tax cut. Who runs for Congress to do that? Right? What constituency is asking for the United States Congress to pass a bill that takes health insurance from all sorts of working Americans, people that are playing by the rules, people like the Burgers, in order to pass a tax cut for the super wealthy? Now, I don't know what's happening behind these closed doors. I mean, I don't know exactly what they're talking about, but I'm going to guarantee you that it's not fundamentally different than what the House bill did, which is what I'm describing here. It is still massive numbers of people losing health care, rich people getting a tax cut, and lots of folks getting hurt. Why? Just because Republicans made a political promise to do this. And I know I have other colleagues who want to talk, so let me just turn for a moment to this process, because the process does matter. The majority is breaking the Senate. They are breaking the Senate. And don't think this won't be how this works if you're in the minority. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we acknowledge that there is a lot that is still very wrong with the American healthcare system. Our constituents command us to try to make those things better. And we would love nothing more than to sit down with the Republicans and try to figure out how we can come together on a path forward to make this healthcare system better. And I know you don't believe us, but you didn't even try. I'm not sure that we believed you at the beginning of 2009 when you said we want to help people get insurance, because we had watched Republicans have control of the presidency and the House and the Senate for a long time without a lot of progress being made. But Democrats tried. Democrats spent a whole year sitting down with Republicans trying to figure out if there was common ground, holding committee processes, exhaustive hearings. We had 30 days of Senate debate here on the floor. And I get it, in the end, Republicans didn't support that package. And I get it that Republicans can lay blame at the feet of Democrats for not crafting something that could win Republican support. I understand how that argument works. But the fact is that when Democrats were in the majority, they tried. They opened up the committee process. They let everybody in the public see the debate we were having. Why? Because it's a big deal. We're talking about 1/6 to 1/5 of the American economy. If you're talking about reordering that big a segment of the U.S. economy, if you're talking about millions of people benefiting or losing, that shouldn't happen behind closed doors. My constituents, even though they are represented by Democrats, have no less rights than the citizens of Iowa or the citizens of Texas who are represented by Republicans. Why are my constituents not allowed to see the details of what's about to happen to their lives? Why are only a select group of Americans able to have a voice inside that room? Why are the people of Connecticut going to get like 3 minutes to look at this bill once it hits the Senate floor? My constituents are Americans just like the constituents in Republican states are Americans. They deserve to know what's about to happen to them. You're breaking the Senate. And it won't get put back together that easily. These are tough questions. They're partisan questions, but it doesn't mean that there's not an obligation to try to find common ground. And if you can't find common ground, don't bury the proceedings behind closed doors where nobody can see it. People hate this bill. They hate this bill, and they hate it in part because they don't trust the process. When they see this balance, tax breaks for pharma, insurance, and rich people, and them losing coverage, they want to know why they lose and why super rich people win, but they can't get answers because it's all happening behind closed doors. It's not too late. I'll just end with this. Senator Schatz said it right. It's not too late. You can, my Republican colleagues can reject this. Say, let's start over. Let's sit down and see if there are some Democrats who want to work on stabilizing these exchanges, seeing if there's some middle ground, being able to build a bipartisan consensus when it comes to the future of the healthcare system. It's not too late.
Democratic Senator from Connecticut, Chris Murphy. There is concern that the federal defunding of Planned Parenthood is in the bill. At a rally in support of Planned Parenthood back in February, speakers came out in support of the organization, which just had its 100th birthday at Washington Square Park. Planned Parenthood is an organization which fights for reproductive rights, family planning, and health care for all. It's been under attack by the Trump administration. New York City public advocate Tish James is speaking at the rally on the importance of Planned Parenthood over the years for young women without health care. And what she saw as a council member in Brooklyn, where young women wanted to go to a place that welcomed them. They wanted cervical and breast cancer screening and wanted to stay healthy. She says she sent women without health insurance to Planned Parenthood.
Because not only am I a public advocate of the city of New York, but I'm a patient at Planned Parenthood as well. And there was times when I was in school when I had nowhere to go. And because of my experience at Planned Parenthood, I don't know about you, but I will speak loudly and will defend Planned Parenthood and will make sacrifices to keep their doors open. Yes. Do you stand with me? Yes. And so Planned Parenthood includes the health of freelance and contract workers who maybe don't have insurance or are under insurance or underinsured. It also includes the health of trans men and trans women who, yes, who often face extra scrutiny and discrimination when it comes to insurance and health coverage. Basic health care is not and should not be a luxury only because only to those who can afford it. And it should only, and luxury health care, again, should apply, should not, again, be exclusive. And when we talk about health care, and for those who are making decisions like the men in Congress, right, boo. And to the and to that president, because he's not my president. And to that president and his band of billionaires. Boo. Healthcare should not only apply to them. And so I just wanted to say that this is really about healthcare. This is about family planning. And for those who are pro-life, I just came from Brooklyn. I just came from one side of Brooklyn, which is invisible. And I passed by a house of worship, and there was a line around the corner of individuals who were looking for clothes, standing in line for food. And they were seniors, and they were children, and they were young people. And these are the individuals which are oftentimes invisible and locked out of the sunshine of opportunity. And all of those individuals who stood online in the cold this morning at 9:30, I would dare guess that most of them do not have health care. If you are concerned about life, you should be concerned about those individuals who are struggling under the weight of poverty.
As women listen to James, what she says rings true to thousands standing in the cold at the rally in Washington Square Park on a winter day. James says there's a responsibility to stand with Planned Parenthood, this non-judgmental place, this harbor, and a cause worth fighting for.
Planned Parenthood saves lives. I've seen it for myself. And Planned Parenthood is a place of last resort for millions of Americans. And it is a responsibility of every single one of us to remember this and not just know it and not just believe in it, but fight for it.
Yes.
Fight for ourselves, fight for our sisters, fight for our children, fight for our friends, fight for our families, fight for the invisible, fight for those who are too afraid to fight. Fight with all your passion and all your being. Fight and stand up because dissent equals democracy. Fighting because whenever you see a lawless government, you've got a responsibility to stand up and fight back. We are in the fight of our lives right now, a fight for the soul of this country. And a fight for Planned Parenthood, we've got to fight for an American institution now and forever. It would be an insult to the women that came before us, the women whose shoulders we stand on, not to compromise, not to give in, and to not to accept going back. Remember, and I want to be very clear about this, this is not unexpected. We cannot be surprised that these rights and the centers that provide these rights are under attack. Remember that the women that came before us told us to be ready and to rise up and to resist. Rise, resist. Repeat. Rise, resist, repeat. Rise, resist, repeat. Rise, resist, repeat.
When repro rights are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
When Planned Parenthood is under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
It's so exciting to be here. I am here as somebody who is a staunch supporter of Planned Parenthood and a staunch abortion rights advocate.
Liz Winstead is co-creator of Comedy Central's The Daily Show. She's founder and chief creative officer of Lady Parts Justice League.
Look at you! Hi! So, as you know, Planned Parenthood clinics around the country right now are being protested. We are here respectfully protesting publicly to allow patients to have some care. So I would like you guys to do something right now. Pull out your phones and take a picture of the person next to you. And then I want you to put it on Twitter with the hashtag #ProtestPP and then hashtag #DefendPP. So these people, we can take their feed over and we can tell them that we are watching. Do it. So, hi! it's so exciting to be here. I am here as somebody who is a staunch supporter of Planned Parenthood and a staunch abortion rights advocate. My story is not unlike a lot of stories. I got pregnant the first time I ever had sex at age 16. Catholic family, I was alone. I had to deal with unintended pregnancy. I had to deal with all the fear that goes along with that. I had to deal with the fact that I had to go alone to figure out how I was going to have an abortion, because at 16 I knew I couldn't have a kid, I wasn't ready. I ended up at a crisis pregnancy center, a place that was a fake clinic that purported to be somebody that was gonna help me. A woman walks out wearing a lab coat, and then it should have occurred to me that you wear a lab coat at the long comb counter also, and that she wasn't a doctor. But I peed on a stick, I found out I was pregnant, and she told me my options were mommy or murder. There are three times the amount of these fake clinics than there are Planned Parenthoods and independent clinics around the country. They prey on women, they use like the same font as Planned Parenthood, and they lure people in. So I speak to you today as the founder of an organization called Lady Parts Justice League. And my drive to start this organization was twofold. The media does not report on issues relating to reproductive rights and justice and abortion. They think of it as a woman's issue instead of a person's issue. They don't even understand that trans men can get pregnant. They don't understand anything. So we need to be the voices. Thank you for being here to understand that reproductive rights are human rights. Yes. That if we don't have the full panoply of our rights, we will never be equal. And I say, the fight continues every single day. And I just want to say one thing about talking about abortion. Part of the reason that we're here is because we don't talk about abortion. Many of the speakers have pointed out that Planned Parenthood's one of those services. Abortion is a small part of what they do. But so what? I don't care if Planned Parenthood did 100% of abortions. I don't care. There's no shame in abortion. Having an abortion is a moral choice. And we need to start talking abortion and put it in its proper place, which is in the landscape of healthcare decisions somebody might have to make in their lifetime. About all the amazing things Planned Parenthood does, to understand there are no good abortions, there are no bad abortions, there is only the abortion that someone needs and they deserve to get.
Liz Winstead with Lady Parts Justice. You can join at ladypartsjustice.com. The group says join because women decide elections, and if we get together, blow this stuff up in a smart and funny way, we just may be able to get folks to sit up, take action, and reverse this erosion of rights. This evening, New Yorkers are planning a 24-hour vigil to protest Republican health care legislation in the Senate. The overnight vigil, starting about now, is outside the Trump Hotel in Columbus Circle. Make the Road New York Rise and Resist. The New York Nurses Association and allies are gathering as part of a nationwide wave to protest the Senate bill. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.